From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the fourth day of December 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group. He's in Decatur, Illinois. In agricultural news, two new names have been thrown into the hat as possibilities for U.S. Secretary of Agriculture and or U.S. Trade Representative. Smithfield Foods has reported a 76% drop in its fiscal second quarter earnings, and the CFTC is convening a new panel on convergence. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. Also in this half hour, we'll hear a commentary from the Farm Bureau and that story from Daryl Good I promised you yesterday. At the end of the half hour, meteorologist Peter Levitt will join us to take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. It all happens right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of the University of Illinois and Public Radio.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
In Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. December wheat at $4.67¾, a loss of 33 cents on the afternoon. March at $4.86, down 33¾. And the May wheat down 33¾ at $4.99½. July at $5.12¼, down 34 cents. Kansas City wheat settled the December at $4.97, 32½ lower. The spring wheat in Minneapolis at $5.72¼. Down 15¾. December corn futures 13¾ lower for that contract, 318¼ the settlement price. March at 334, down 14¼, and the May at 345, 14¼ lower. July corn at 355¼, down 14½, and December at 379¼, down 15 cents for the day. December oat futures at 198½, down 7. January beans down 19 cents at $8.11. The March at 815½, 19½ lower. The May at 823¾, down 19¼. And the November beans settled 835, down 19¾. December bean meal at 247.30, off 70 cents. December bean oil 106 lower at 29.22. From the Mercantile Exchange side of the CME Group, nearby live cattle at 83.07½, 75 cents lower. The Feb's down a buck at 83.07½ as well. January feeders at 88.10, down 25 cents. And December ling hogs at 57.10, 47½ cents lower on the afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Nearby January crude oil futures, $44.30 a barrel, down $2.49. Ethanol at 148.9, down 6¼. Natural gas at 602.8, 31.9 lower. The RBOB at 97.3, down 6¾. And January heating oil at $1.51¼, down 6¼. Propane futures at 62¢, 3¼ lower, and the gold futures are now $5 lower at $763.80 an ounce. The Dow Jones Industrial Average just 62 points lower at 85.30. The dollar trading at 86.37 is down 0.34, that is. And the CRB index today at 220.1 is down 6.3 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like from our own chief meteorologist, Ed Kieser. He says tonight in the north, cloudy skies, scattered showers and flurries. In central sections, partly to mostly cloudy, a few scattered flurries. In the south, partly cloudy. Lows will range from 2 in northwestern Illinois to 22 in the far south. Tomorrow in northern Indiana, says our own Ed Kieser, mostly cloudy, scattered snow showers and flurries. Elsewhere, mostly sunny. Highs tomorrow will range from 21 in northern Illinois to 36 in the far south. The extended forecast says the Clipper system will move across the Great Lakes Friday night and Saturday, with some snow likely for at least the northern half of the two states. However, the greatest snowfall should stay in the northern parts of Illinois and Indiana. A significant weather system may impact the area late Monday into Tuesday as well, says our own Ed Kieser. Details are a bit sketchy to work out at this point. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from WILL AM 580.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgro seed products, including Asgro's new Roundup Ready 2-yield soybeans. Lernard Seed Service provides services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. 217-497-2270.
On a Thursday afternoon, time to check in on what's been happening in the world of agricultural futures. Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group is here this afternoon, and he will join us in a moment. A quick look at what happened in the marketplace. Corn down 13 to 15 cents. Beans off about 19 for the day. Wheat futures were off 33. And the livestock side of the CME group settled lower as well, with the cattle futures down anywhere between 65 cents and a dollar, and the hogs off something between 50 and 70 cents on the afternoon. Hi, Dan. Good afternoon to you. Tell me about the marketplace, please.
First off, I want to start off. I've been out doing a lot of farmer meetings here the last 2-3 weeks, and I am totally amazed at the people that listen to WILL radio here. They all come up and tell me that they like the give and take that you and I go after one another once in a while. So it is exciting to see how many people are actually listening to the ag programming here that you guys offer out of Champaign.
It's really exciting to do that. And, you know, I'm hoping that you're hearing from some other radio stations along the way, too, because we're airing on several places now, and it's good to have that kind of exposure. But I guess what we want to know from you today is what they've been telling you when you're out at those meetings.
Well, naturally, everybody's concerned because these markets are not responding that they had hoped for, at least while they were harvesting their crop. I mean, you know, every farmer's a little different on their sales, but, you know, they did a lot of selling a year ago at this time, early January and March and whatnot, you know, between $4 and $5 on their corn and, you know, between, you know, $9 and $11 or so on their soybeans. But just about zero sales were probably made during the month of June and July when we had that, you know, $2 bubble in corn, and when we had that $4 or $5 bubble in soybeans. So they still have a lot of inventory to market. A lot of them have it on storage or some kind of basis contract or delayed pricing agreement. And of course, you know, by this time of year, at least over the past several years, the market has always begun to show some plus signs and, you know, begun their rally. And, of course, this year, none of that is working, actually. You know, anybody that put any crop in storage is actually behind the eight ball right now. Now, a lot of them don't need their cash this year, but they are definitely concerned the way the market is performing. And then, of course, when they look at next year's input costs and what they can get out of corn and soybeans for distant bids, that just does not work. So you hear a lot of chatter of what they may or may not be doing to try to alter their plans based upon these higher input costs.
Well, what kind of cheddar is it? Are they going to put more beans in the ground? And percentage is probably a better idea than, yeah, we're going to do it.
Well, I think most people, from what I can gather, are trying to stay as flexible as possible. They're doing their fall tillage work, but they're passing a lot on the fertilizer, and I don't blame them. You know, if you look at the way the market performed this past year, you can just about guess that the fertilizer company are long a lot of inventory up toward the highs. Seed corn companies and seed bean companies are all long inventory up at the high. So all of the people that sell to the farmer, as far as seed dealers go, as fertilizer people go, chemical people, they all have their inventory at higher levels. And farmers now they don't know whether or not to pay that price, especially since they don't have no new crop sold or very little bit sold, and then current day prices don't make it. So it's going to be an interesting standoff over the next 3 months, because I do think at the end of the day, You're going to see big drops in fertilizer prices. I think you're going to see big drops in seed corn and seed sales. I think there's going to be a lot of discounts be extended. I already understand some have been extended, prepaid discounts and whatnot. I think you're going to see that, and there'll probably be all kinds of seed available this spring, and there'll be all kinds of fertilizer available at cheaper costs.
Well, then corn will be put in the ground. I was going to ask you if ADM was worried about not having enough corn in the ground, but if you think there are going to be discounts, and maybe there will be plenty of acres.
Well, for a company that uses, we have to buy 3 million bushels of corn a day, or 3 million bushels of grain. So we definitely want to make sure that we got plenty of crop out there. But the way the current demand picture is, it looks like we're going to have a much larger carryover going into the new crop. Like I was telling Dave this morning, these export sales were down 47% from where we were a year ago at this time. So, you know, USDA's looking at about a 2 billion export number. You're probably be closer to 1.7 or 1.8 or even lower. So there's 300 million bushels there. The way the ethanol grind's going, USDA's got us plugged in at about 4 billion. I think ethanol grind, it wouldn't surprise me to fall way underneath 3.5. So all of a sudden, we're looking at a carryover up around 2 billion bushels versus the 1.1 that USDA has on the books.
Well, given all of that, I only have maybe a minute left, a little less than that. What kind of projections have you got for corn only?
Well, we're getting down here to some levels that should begin to offer some support. There's been a lot of 3.10, 3.20 type talk on December futures, and here we are. Same way, that's with March corn futures are down here at these levels. I think there's still maybe 10 to 15 cents yet to squeeze out of this market, but I would think that we would probably finish up liquidating the funds out of this market here over the next week or two, or at least before Christmas, and then the market ought to level out.
Okay, thanks much.
Very well.
Hey, Dan, have a good time out there on those meetings.
Sure will.
Okay, bye-bye. Dan Zwicker is with ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report each and every Thursday afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. 866-837-9027.
Dave Dickey is here now to take a complete look at today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, President-elect Barack Obama is considering nominating two middle-of-the-road Hispanic Western U.S. congressmen to the positions of Agriculture Secretary and U.S. Trade Representative. Representative John Salazar, a Democrat from Colorado, is under consideration for Agriculture Secretary, and Representative Xavier Becerra, a Democrat from California, is under consideration as trade representative. Salazar serves on the House Agriculture Committee and has played a role in the 2008 Farm Bill by insisting on more aid for fruit and vegetable growers and for renewable fuels research. Becerra is seen as someone who could appeal to both business and labor groups. Pork producer Smithfield Foods today reported a 76% drop in its fiscal second quarter earnings as high feed costs linked to skyrocketing grain prices hurt its hog and butterball turkey operations. The Smithfield, Virginia-based company says profit fell to $4.2 million, or 3 cents per share, from year-ago profits of $17.4 million, or 13 cents per share. Looking ahead, Smithfield Foods says the next two quarters will be difficult due to high grain costs, but production cutbacks in chicken and beef should strengthen pricing. The Commodity Futures Trading Commission is launching a subcommittee that will examine the lack of convergence between cash and agricultural futures prices. The CFTC also will likely issue a ruling in the coming weeks on a proposal to improve convergence on Chicago Board of Trade wheat futures. The new convergence panel, which will be a subcommittee of the Agricultural Advisory Committee at the CFTC, will be made up of agricultural industry representatives, producers, regulators, and exchanges. USDA Secretary Ed Schaefer says agricultural officials and their Chinese counterparts are now meeting to discuss how China can develop an effective food safety system. The discussions follow a series of highly publicized food contamination cases in China that have led many consumers to stop buying certain foods, such as dairy products and eggs, for fear of contamination. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming at WILL Public Radio for the Farming World. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Up next, that story I told you about yesterday with U of I Extension Ag economist Daryl Good. He believes that should the economy stabilize, U.S. grain and oilseed farmers can continue to expect higher prices for their crops. Higher is a relative term here, but in general means a post-harvest rally off the current lows, says University of Illinois Extension Ag economist Daryl Good. He admits it might take 7 or 8 months for that rally to occur, and that it depends largely on the health of the U.S. economy.
If, in fact, the worst is over in the stock market and in some of the employment numbers, the housing market, and we see energy prices stabilize, recover somewhat, then I think corn and soybean prices will come along with them. So in the case of corn, can we see 75 cents, even a dollar recovery in prices? Perhaps. Soybeans, similarly, a dollar to a dollar and a half recovery from the, kind of the harvest lows would not be unusual.
Not, mind you, says Daryl Good, a move back to $8 corn and $16 soybeans, but something that certainly would cover the cost of farmland ownership. Prices, he says, that would still reflect a new and higher plateau.
No, I think clearly we are at a new plateau. I mean, even now at $3.50 corn, which is kind of what we consider to be a low price, we're holding there, and that's well above what we would have thought about, you know, prior to 2006. Same way on soybeans, $9, when historically the last 30 years, $6.50 was where we traded. I think we're at a new plateau. Current prices may be at kind of the bottom end of where we'll see over the next 4 or 5 years. I still think in terms of corn at $4.50, soybeans at $10.50 is probably kind of value over the next 3 or 4 years.
$4.50 and $10.50. Those are the targets. Daryl Good says farmers should consider the norm and plan for as they lay out the coming season's budgets. It's a new cost structure. It is dramatically different and to some extent still in flux. It means caution is still the economic word of the day. Caution may be the economic word, but of course it's not the final word from Daryl Good. You can read what he has to say each and every week on the Farm Doc website. The address is www.farmdoc.uiuc.edu. Now from Daryl Good in agricultural economics, we go to food policy and Farm Bureau, Shelby County Farm Bureau, in fact, where Amy Roach just wants to know why the price of food is still high, even though the price of commodities has crashed.
Oil is now under $50 a barrel, and corn is under $3.50 a bushel. So farmers are waiting for the price of food to fall. Earlier this year, all we ever heard seemed to be about ethanol production and what was causing the out-of-control food price increases. Skyrocketing was the adjective the pundits seemed to like to throw around the most. Some documents surfaced in Washington, D.C., showing that it was the grocery manufacturers who were putting a bug in the ear of the national news media. No matter which network you watched last spring, the talking heads could not seem to stop talking about the unintended consequences of ethanol policy. After all, corn prices were rising, food prices were rising, people in third world countries were rioting, and ethanol had to be the culprit. Talk about being in the wrong place at the wrong time. In April, an ear of sweet corn with husks of $100 bills made the cover of Time magazine with the headline, "The Clean Energy Myth." Offensive editorial cartoons were printed depicting farmers behind the wheel of ethanol-powered SUVs running over starving children. Not inclined to look into the real reasons behind the cause of food price increases, the media took their spoon-fed story from the grocery manufacturers and indignantly asked, "Why are we burning our food in our gas tanks anyway?" Farm Bureau argued that clean-burning, domestically produced ethanol must be part of our national energy solution. The United States has plenty of corn for food and fuel. Farmers emphasized that one out of every three bushels of corn that goes into ethanol production comes out as high-protein livestock feed. Agriculture spokespersons talked until they were blue in the face about the farm value of corn being such a small part of the overall cost of the food we buy at the store. On average, farmers receive just 20 cents of every retail dollar of food spent by consumers. For highly processed foods, the farmer's share is much smaller. Here are some examples at $7 per bushel for corn. The farm value of corn and a gallon of milk is less than a quarter, actually 22 cents. In an 18-ounce box of cornflakes, 10 cents. And in a pound of chicken, 33 cents. Now slice each of those farm values in half, because over the past few months, the price of corn has plunged to nearly $3.50 per bushel. What about the remaining 80 cents of the consumer's retail food dollar? That 80 cents pays for the labor on the other side of the farm gate, for all of the electricity used in processing, for all the transportation costs of shipping raw materials and finished products, and for all the marketing and advertising costs, not to mention the profit margins at the wholesale and retail level. The price of energy is one of the biggest components of food prices. Economists say energy prices were three times more responsible for the boost in food prices than commodity price increases. International demand, weather problems, and the cheap dollar also contributed. Now the price of oil has dropped like a brick, from $147 to under $50 for the first time since early 2007. But somehow the grocery manufacturers have not noticed, or maybe they are hoping no one is paying attention. The government says food prices went up 8% on an annual basis between September 2007 and September 2008. In the meantime, several food companies have announced healthy quarterly profits. Either ethanol production or commodity prices are the reason behind higher prices at the grocery store, or they are not. If the grocers want to claim they are the reason, then it is time to dramatically lower food prices. If there is something else behind the food price increase, then the big food companies owe farmers an apology. This is Amy Rochkis with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochkis' comments are her own and reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved by sharing your views as well. To do so, just give us a call. The number is 217-333-0850.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
In just 2 minutes, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast for the day. Pete Labatt will join us here on a Thursday afternoon. Stay with us.
It's National Cookie Day. It's also St. Barbara Day, patron of brewers, hatters, sailors, and storms. On this day in agricultural history in 1812, the power mower was patented, the horse-drawn mower was granted before patents were numbered, and was lost in the Great Patent Office fire of 1836. In 1816, Benjamin Stillman was born, an American chemist. It was his reporting on the potential uses of crude oil products that gave impetus to plans for drilling the first U.S. producing oil well. In 1864, John Fowler died, an English engineer. He invented the steam-hauled plow and several other special-use plows. During a business trip to Ireland, he witnessed the famine, which followed the failure of 2 years of potato crops. He returned to England determined to use steam power to drain land. The result was his mole drainage plow, shown at the Great Exhibition of 1851. In 1867, National Grange was founded. It was the first organized agricultural movement in the U.S. and tasked with uniting private citizens in improving the economic and social position of the nation's farm population. And in 1970, Cesar Chavez was jailed in California for refusing to cancel a United Farm Workers lettuce boycott. And that's this day in agricultural history.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Time to take our Thursday look at the agricultural weather forecast. Pete Levitt joins us from Massachusetts. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Is it as cold there as it is here?
No, it actually isn't. We're just east of where the core of the cold air is on this pattern we're in right now. And let me describe the general character, and then I think everybody will get the idea of what's going to happen here. We've got what's called a ridge-trough pattern aloft across North America. That's a ridge of high pressure along the west coast, and then a broad trough from central Canada southward through the central states. And then there's a second ridge actually off the east coast. And the flow is defined by that ridge and trough, and what we see is northwesterly winds starting way up in Alaska and north of there, even all the way down through Canada and into the central U.S., and that's a pattern that's going to hang around for probably the next week or two even before we see any relief from that. And that means we're going to see cold air shuttled down through the Canadian prairies and into the north central and midwestern states with little disturbances moving down through that flow, which we call Alberta clippers. And those will give little brief episodes of some light precipitation, mostly as snow. So getting into the forecast, what it says is we've got one of these cool systems coming through today, one of these cold fronts. I should get rid of the word cool and call it cold. That's what it really is. And that's going to continue the cold temperatures down in the teens tonight. Then sort of an attempt to warm up tomorrow as some warmer air comes in ahead of another one of these clippers coming down, but temperatures will stay below freezing tomorrow, up in the upper 20s, maybe low 30s. Then another system comes through Friday night and Saturday. This one might produce a little measurable snow, but it'll still be light, and then cold air follows that. And then we're just going to do it again Sunday, Monday, another system coming down. All in all, a cold pattern with some light snow at times, and I don't think the temperatures will get warm enough to melt any of the snow that's already fallen in any appreciable way. So winter is starting to set in.
Ooh, I guess so. So we have a big trough, and it just keeps dumping cold air, Arctic blast in on top of us, and it's keeping us. Are we well below where we should be, or about the where temps normally are at this time of year?
No, for this week, we're actually going to run quite a bit below. Probably the warmest days will probably be about 3 or 4 degrees below, and to about 12 to 15 degrees below on the coldest days. So we're going to average about 10 degrees below normal for the week, and we don't really see much relief coming following that. What's happening is Canada's been actually rather mild for the month of November, while we've been pretty cold relative to normal. Now that the source of mild air from the Pacific is cut off from Canada, they'll cool off very rapidly, and Arctic air will develop when that happens, and then we'll really get to feel it as we move into the next couple of weeks as that air from Canada, each succeeding episode, colder than the last.
Well, it sounds cold, but I guess we'll talk with you again next week and see if it is that term you like to use last year, persistent.
Right, that's the word.
All right, thanks much.
Right, you're welcome.
Okay, bye. Pete Levitt is an agricultural meteorologist, joined us here on the Closing Mark Report on a Thursday afternoon. Thanks for being with us for the day. And don't forget, if you'd like to hear our future segments, you can do that at 10:15 and 3:15 on the phone. The number is 217-333-3333. 3434. You have a very good afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.